Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
He kōna I purangi tēnei nā te reo irirangi o Aotearoa.
G'day and welcome to Country Life. I'm Duncan Smith.
Kia ora, great to have your company. Ko Sally Round, Dene. Today, I climb onto a bag of straw on an old vintage wagon hitched up to a pair of heavy horses and find out about the Clydesdale, known for its enormous size and feathery hooves.
And later, Janina heads to Wairarapa to check out the gear sale of a neighbouring farm from where she grew up. One of the last of the local rehab soldiers' farms. It's now been sold into forestry.
But first, to our guest this week. When people come to work on New Zealand's orchards and vineyards from Pacific Island countries, they need more than just skills and tools to do the job. And that's where someone like Panada Chittick comes in. She's the coordinator for seasonal workers, or RSE workers, employed at Thomas Brothers Orchards at Riwaka in the Tasman district. The RSE, or Recognised Seasonal Employer Scheme, allows workers in from several countries in the Pacific for up to 7 months over an 11-month period. Cosmo Kentish-Barnes spoke to Panada about her work.
We're looking after our RSE staff from Vanuatu and Samoa.
What sort of pastoral care do you do? What does that mean?
Just about everything, really. Looking after their well-being and help them just the everyday living, like banking and food, you know, shopping or everything, like just to kind of adjust to the life here.
Mm. What are some of the biggest challenges that the RSE workers face when they first get here?
I think the language barriers and communications, I think that's the main thing, because sometimes they're very shy and they're too scared to ask for help. So when they're sick, sometimes they don't want to tell you until they get really sick. And so my job is to make sure that they understand that as soon as they don't feel well, they need to talk to me, and then we can, you know, get help.
You'll contact a doctor or whatever is required.
Yes. And they come from a very warm country, so adjustment, you know, how cold it is here compared to
that must
them.
Be hard. Not at the moment, though.
No, at the moment, they're happy now because it's nice and warm. But winter time, that's when they start to get sick because of the cold, the change, how cold it is, and yes.
So how many RSE workers are you expecting this season?
When we have everybody here, it'll be about 82, plus we have another 20 that come just for like a few weeks, and then they move on to the next orchard. So there's one orchard that need them for like a month, and then we want them for a month, and then they go to Blenheim for the rest of the time until they go home.
If they do move on to another orchard, do you continue your pastoral care role?
No, then that's the next company will be looked after them.
Where do the RSE workers stay while they're working here?
We have a few accommodation on the orchard. So, yeah, there's just around here. Our orchard have enough accommodation for everyone.
And how did you get into this role? What's your background?
I started as just working in the orchard. We moved up from Ashburton, and this is my first time working in an orchard. And then they see it that, you know, I guess I have potential, so I become the supervisor of just the team outside. And then the next year they decided, okay, they let me be the supervisor in the pack house. And then when this role come, they said, well, I made for the jobs.
Do Do you have a social work background?
No, I don't. But we just have to have some passion, and they're really lovely people that, you know, I have ever met, really. And yeah, you don't realize, you know, how many people come here and work, and all the challenges that they have to face.
It must be quite hard for you sometimes seeing the RSC workers go home, because you must make some good friends.
Yes. Yeah, we do. You can't help it, because you work with them for 7 months of the year. And then, yeah, we do. We do make a few good friends, and they're special people. Yeah.
Where are you from originally?
I'm from Thailand.
From Thailand. And how long have you been here?
About 32 years.
Yes. Do you ever go back to Thailand?
Haven't yet. So.
What were you doing in Ashburton?
I was a florist, and then I worked in the lily farm in Rakaia. But we just love it here. Less stress for me, and everywhere you want to go is not too far, and everywhere is just so beautiful. Yes.
Have you got a husband or a partner?
Yes, my husband, he works here as well.
Oh, he works here too. Do you get sick of seeing each other sometimes?
No, we actually like it. You know, just now in the last 4 months, I do this role as pastoral care, and now he's in the orchard on his own. So we have a little bit of adjustment. But we like working together, so that was quite good. Yes.
We are coming into a covered area between the two packhouses.
How are you?
Hello.
I didn't even ask your name, sorry.
Cosmo.
This is Cassie, it's Cosmo, and that's Graham.
Cassie, how long have you been here?
I've been here since November last year. We came here mainly for tinning, and then after pack house, we go back home. Yeah, see, it's good when just keeping to work, and yeah, sometimes when you don't work, you feel not good.
Yes. Yeah. So, what will you do with what you earn?
I make my house. Already finished now. I just waiting for painting, and yeah.
And when you're not here working at the orchard, what do you do back in Vanuatu?
We just make garden and make a little farm.
Do you have animals?
Yeah, pig, bullock, and yeah, just a little farm.
Yes. Yeah. Have you got children?
Yeah, I have 4 children.
You must be missing them.
Yeah, already. I already miss them.
How do you connect with them?
On Facebook. I already call them every afternoon after work.
Yes. Yeah. You're in contact with them all the time.
Yeah.
And how great is it having Panada here to help out if need be?
Panada is our pastoral care, and she's doing a good job, good work with us. Yeah, and we're so lucky with her.
Cassie Lenken from Vanuatu. Cosmo Kentish-Barnes was also talking to Panada Chittick at Thomas Brothers Orchards in Iriwaka.
Now let's take a look at what's making headlines on the Rural News Desk this week. And some big changes could be in the pipeline for environmental regulations affecting farmers. Winter grazing regulations and stock exclusion rules could be scrapped or amended under the government's proposed changes to the Resource Management Act. The opposition Labor Party and environmental groups have slammed the proposals, saying they put profits ahead of the environment. But Federated Farmers spokesperson Colin Hurst says it's not a free-for-all, and rules will still apply.
So we've had to borrow substantially this year to plant our crop, and hoping for reasonable yield. Just hope the price stays firm enough that we can make a profit and start paying some of that debt back down, which is going to take many years to pay back.
And RNZ's Rural News team caught up with the Agriculture and Trade Minister, Todd McClay, this week after his visit to China promoting trade with New Zealand. Some of New Zealand's key exports like sheep meat and logs have been struggling with lower prices due to softer demand from China. For example, forestry export revenue is forecast to decrease 9% to $5.8 billion in the year to June due to weak confidence there. The industry here is already feeling the pinch. Prices for an A-grade log are now so low it's not economic to harvest them, and many crews have downed tools. Mr. McLay is optimistic, though.
For high-quality, safe food products out of New Zealand, there's huge opportunity there. We're just going to make sure that we are present in the market, we're building those sustainable relationships, and we're talking up the really good things that come out of New Zealand, because we know Chinese consumers value that and they want them.
Sticking with China, the future for New Zealand's frozen deer velvet exports remains up in the air. Most of our velvet is sent abroad frozen, with a large chunk going to China for its traditional medicine market. But late last year, China decided it would no longer accept frozen product, only dried, effective from the end of April. The drying process generally comes at a higher cost for farmers. This season's velvet's been packed, frozen and shipped, but the future for next season's exports, worth around $70 million a year, is still uncertain. Dairy Industry New Zealand's Mandy Bell.
We'll start loading up containers. The first ones will be heading out towards the end of this year and early into 25. So we have got time, and if we need to have Plan Bs in place, then we'll be well across all the different options that we've got to enable that to happen.
Let's take a look at horticulture now, and mandarin growers are in the thick of harvest. The quality's great, but yields are down and prices are lower because people just aren't buying. Johnny Reed has 24 hectares of Satsuma and Silver Hill mandarins in Kaitaia. He says they're about 2 weeks into the season, which will run through until the end of May.
We're very light on numbers this year. Quite a bit lighter than we'd like to be, but still, we're still going to, you know, get some reasonable volumes out.
And here's Michael Franks of the large kiwi fruit firm Seeker on how their season's been going.
Season looks a lot better. The regions, though, you know, in Northland, Coromandel, Gisborne, and over in Napier in the Hawke's Bay, all those regions actually delivered a lower yield than what we expected, albeit much better than last year. But the crops here in the Bay of Plenty are much, much better than what we expected. So we're just seeing how it all balances out.
Michael Franks says they've packed about 20 million trays of kiwi fruit so far. Now, close your ears to this story if, like me, you're a little rodent shy. Zespri has had to delay its kiwi fruit marketing campaign in Europe. An infestation of mice was discovered in the fruit holds of the first charter vessel of the season. There were about 1.2 million trays of Sun Gold on board, which could now cost Zespri between $25 and $30 million in lost sales and other expenses. Here's Zespri's Jason Tabrick.
Unfortunately, we have detected that there has been mice activity present within the vessel, and it is to a reasonable extent now that we're finding quite a lot of contained product that's been contaminated. So what we are doing now is assessing how much of the 4,800 pallets of fruit have been impacted.
Yuck! I'm taken back to my worst ever student flat. But it's a slightly happier picture for those in the kumara business. Doug Nilsson is one of Northland's largest growers and lost his entire crop to floods last year. But this season is looking much better.
So we've had to borrow substantially this year to plant our crop, and hoping for reasonable yield. Just hope the price stays firm enough that we can make a profit and start paying some of that debt back down, which is going to take many years to pay back.
And just finally, shearing legend Sir David Fagan has hopes the New Zealand Agricultural Show will still go ahead in November. Remember, last week's organisers announced this year's ANP show in Christchurch would be postponed over financial concerns. The City Council has injected $5 million into a land deal to ensure its future, but whether the show will go ahead is still up in the air. Sir David says it could be a death knell for the iconic show if gates don't open this year.
It is our biggest ANP show in the country, so I was quite shocked when they pulled the pin on it so early too. Because once these things stop, it's very hard to start them again, I think.
And for more on these stories, go to our webpage, rnz.co.nz/countrylife.
This is Country Life on RNZ National 101 FM.
Sally, where are you taking us this week?
Back to Taranaki. Last week we were on the lower forested slopes of the volcano, and today I'm taking you to the end of a gravel road where the farmland which encircles the Maunga almost runs out. And while I was there, I had to pinch myself as it seemed like I'd gone back in time. You'll see what I mean. Take a listen.
So it's perfect.
So you can pop in and keep an eye
on
them.
Yeah, exactly.
Shall we go and have a look?
Yeah, why not? That's great. I've just got five now. I've got just four mature ones and yielding fully. One of the mares is...
I'm with Steve Muggeridge, a man with a passion for Clydesdale horses.
How many have you had at its peak?
Oh, 12.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, back in the day when we were doing a lot of work. And I also cut the numbers down a wee bit also because not the work around that used to be, you know. I still do a bit of public work around the place, vintage weekends and parades and that sort of thing, you know, go to a few shows. This time of year is just when the show season's sort of winding down.
Here they are, aren't they beautiful? Who have we got here?
So we got Merrick here, that's sniffing everything. He's a 9-year-old gelding. We got Fiona on the right, she's a 14-year-old mare. And then we've got out in the paddock there, the wee yearling, her name's Rita. Her mum's over there tied to the truck on the far side, her name's Beth. And then Beth is 7 years old, and we've got Jess, she's a light strawberry roan mare, she's 11. So Jess is one that's in foal.
We last met Steve about a decade ago, ploughing with his heavy horses at Erewhon Station in the South Island. Now he's back in Taranaki, where the family interest in Clydesdales all started.
You breed the horses, you break them in, you get them working, and you have them all your life, and they, just like this fella that keeps coming up to us, they just become your mates, you know, they really do. It's, he's a bit over the top, he loves a bit of human attention.
Do you think I'm in the way here?
No, he's all right, he's like this with everyone, he just loves human attention, you know. They've all had a feed just before when I came up here, they've all had a good feed, so yeah, they just love that human attention. They're just like family members, really.
Yeah. How long have you been involved with the Clydesdales?
My whole life. Yeah, I way back from when I was a kid, Dad farmed with horses all his life till he passed away in 1985, and I just carried them on. And yeah, it's great. It's a lot of work, but yeah, it's a real passion. You can see these horses here right now; they're right in your face. It's
they're interested in everything.
Yeah, they become your mates. All right, there's no doubt about that.
Steve's late father, Lou Muggeridge, set up a Clydesdale stud at Tikiri, 15 minutes away, back in 1976. So for Steve, this grazing block is a bit like coming home.
Thank you.
Steve's getting a pair ready for work, and work is what the Clydesdale was bred for. Their great height and strength ideal for pulling ploughs and other farm tools before the arrival of the motorised tractor. Today they'll be pulling Steve's vintage flat-topped wagon.
Well, I'm hopping on.
Yeah.
Steve's got a special sack of chaff for me to sit on. Up we go. All right.
This is an old wagon. It's 1906. It's got a wind-up brake, but we don't need that with these two mares in it because they brake with the britching, you see. So.
Was this your father's wagon as well?
No, I picked this up way back in the late 80s from Martin. Huh? I drove past his cocky's place and was sitting out in the paddock, so I went and seen him about it and I bought it. He didn't give me a very good deal, but I still got it. And we spent a few dollars on it, and it all paid off. It's come up really well, actually.
We've got Mount Taranaki straight ahead of us.
Yes, we have.
The horses.
We got Beth on the left and Jess on the right, so we're nearly ready to go.
Thanks.
Okay, girls, come up. Come up. Come here.
What sort of weight are they pulling, Steve?
Oh. It's on wheels, so the wagon does free wheel. Steady, guys. So going downhill, it's virtually nothing. And then if we turn around and come back up that little rise, it'll most likely turn into just over a ton. Yeah. As soon as you pull off the tar seal onto grass, the weight virtually doubles, especially when you've got a load on.
We're definitely off the tar seal here on this remote gravel track. The last farmhouse is behind us and we're heading up towards the mountain. Through a cutting we go and there it is, Mount Taranaki in front of us. It's a magical sight with the horses' heads bobbing in the foreground. Steve does hitch up his horses now and then like this for weddings, funerals and agricultural shows.
When you said your father farmed with them, is that all he had?
Yes, that's all we had. So I know it's going back a few years now, but 1988 was the last year that we ever stacked hay, did everything with the horses, mowed it, rode it, put all the stacks in. That was the last year.
And why did he not move on to mechanical, to the tractors?
Just the same passion as me. He loved the horses and, he just loved the horses and it was... just the passion of his as well, so it was great, really, an absolute passion, and you've got to, like I was saying earlier, you've got to love it because it is a lot of work, I'm still shoeing my own horses, but, I'm only 63, but the old arthritis is getting into me a bit, so I still do it, but it's jolly hard work, there's no doubt about that.
You say that the work is not there. People were interested in using them for ploughing?
Yes,
still?
Yeah, that's the trouble. There's not many of us left, that know those old ways, working the horses and feeding them right and that sort of thing and looking after them. Working them as in doing all their agriculture work, their ploughing and cropping and that, There's still one or two in the South Island. But
why would people still want to do it when there are so much easier ways to...
Oh, there is easier ways, there's no doubt about it. It's just the attraction. Like I say, you breed the horses, you break them in, you get them working, and you have them all your life, and they just become your mates, they really do.
Steve also has an official role within the Clydesdale community. He's the president of the Clydesdale Society of New Zealand, which has about 160 members.
A lot of Clydesdales are getting ridden, eh? Yeah, again, now because most shows now have a ridden class. And
That's different from before?
Yeah, way different because they were bred to work. But the ridden class seems to be very popular at shows and lots of sort of small block holders have got them, and... just the physique of them, and just they look so cool when they're all cleaned up and with their flowing feather and all that sort of thing. You know what I mean?
The hooves with the beautiful feathery
yes, exactly,
coat over the top.
So yeah, once they're all cleaned up and all cleaned up for the shows and that, they do look very smart. And a good horse will show itself off when you take it to a show. I know my fellas do. They might just look a bit plain out in the paddock, but you get their gear on and get them in the show ring and the four of them in the wagon or three of them in the wagon, they strut their stuff. They really know what's going on, and it makes you quite proud. There's been quite a few moments in my life when the hair on the back of my neck has stood up. A 100-year show at Levin show there quite a few years ago. I had five horses in a big wagon. I went past the grandstand and everyone stood up and clapped and the hair on the back of my neck just stood up. It just made me feel so proud, I can tell you that. That was amazing, Even having a six-horse team, even if you're doing a bit of ploughing and you just sit back on the seat and you're studying them all and just think, it just makes you so proud that you've bred and broken them and got them all working and there's nothing like it, really.
Do you ride them yourself, Steve?
No, I don't, actually. I'm real keen on working them. We have ridden the odd one or two, but I don't make a point of it, you know what I mean? So, yeah.
How's the show season been?
There's been a lot of shows this year. I've actually, entries have doubled since last year. Like Levin show this year was a royal show and back in January we had 23 entries. Our other main North Island show is Morrinsville and they had 18 or 19 there. That's a North Island championship show. People were keen, but there's still, from the Clydesdale Society point of view, we've got to look at, see if we can sort out some more classes for these people that have got one horse and they can go into riding. And we've started up a long reining class where you can just drive your horses with long reins over a course, just to sort of get more people out there interested. It's all for the novice and it's all a learning thing, which is great. Public absolutely just love seeing the Clydesdales.
So it's in good heart.
Yes, very good heart.
And breeding? What about that? Are people breeding them?
Yes, so breeding is hit and miss, no matter, you can do everything to the best of your ability and still end up with nothing. So it's like me this year, I sent three mares away to get in foal and end up with one in foal, you know? So just one of those things, you know? So yeah.
So you want to build it up again?
Build it up again, just get numbers back up again just to replace some of the older ones, you know? Like even Fiona there, she's 14, but she's a great, real hard working mare. She's still got a lot of life, and they all have, but I just like to have these young ones coming on.
Would you like to see more farmers using them in front of the plough?
Oh, too right I would, you know, but I think in this day and age people would laugh at me, you know. They really would, silly, you know. They would think it's a hell of a joke. But
so
I,
do you go down to the pub and try and convince them?
Some of them think it, you know, they think I'm I think it's pretty cool that I've still hung on to the horses. You know, they don't all agree that there's still a place for them for whatever reasons. But yeah, it's quite a hard case, really.
What about the international scene? How's that for the Clydesdale horse?
Oh, great. Australia's very strong. Yeah, very strong indeed. And a lot of our recent stallions that have been bought in New Zealand have come from Australia. Even further afield, you know, even way over in Scotland and where the Clydesdale horse originated, you know, it's pretty strong over there too, actually. Yeah.
And what do you think the future of the breed is here in New Zealand?
I think it's very strong. It's got to the point now people are just, they want to keep this breed alive. Our numbers have dropped over the years, the breeding side, but the last couple of years it's starting to pick up again now. You know, after my generation, we haven't got that many young ones coming on behind this sort of thing, but I just hope they can keep it going, you know.
How are you going to bring them on?
Yeah, for the horse's sake, you know, that's the thing. Yeah.
How are you going to bring them into it?
It's just so hard. I'd hate to see it die out myself.
Yeah, it's a bit tricky, isn't it? When it's a workhorse,
yes,
and you've got young people coming through, I mean, what can they do with
it? That's dead right, and it's hard. And unless you've got a bit of land and that sort of thing, it's very hard, Sally, you know. I don't think they'll die out, but they are a pretty rare breed, if you know what I mean.
Hold on. We're back in the wagon and the horses have a clip in their step as they head towards home. I'm still seated on the bag of chaff. In fact, it was pretty comfortable.
Let's move up that little rise. It's got a pretty good lock on it. Full lock wagon, you can spin right around.
Wow, that was a tight corner.
Yeah, it just because the whole front turntable goes right around underneath the body of the wagon, so it's pretty cool, actually. This flat top, it tracks well along the road, just with two horses in it. I have had four horses in it, and I've even had five horses in it, but I put a big load on it, you know, for the show scene and that sort of thing, so they can see the horses working.
How heavy a load can they carry like this?
A horse, and you know, just in this day and age, a good fit horse that's done a fair bit of work should be able to pull a ton quite easily by itself. And it's a bit like the three furrow plough. We have six horses in it, so it's sort of two horses per furrow. And but back in the day, you know, when we were on the farm, we never had a big plough. We just had mainly single furrow, double furrow plough. So what we used to do is we'd put three horses in a single furrow plough and stop for lunch, and you just keep going all day, you know, and then just that extra bit of horsepower can get a lot done, you know.
How old were you when you first started ploughing? Dad
was there. My father was with me, but he let me do my first couple of runs of ploughing when I was 12 years old. So I quite enjoyed it, you know. I haven't done any competition ploughing for quite a few years, but I used to enjoy that too, you know. Yeah,
do you think there's room for horse and plough nowadays, especially around the emphasis on soil and trying to keep cultivation to a minimum?
Oh, I feel there is, you know. Like back in the day, people would laugh at me, like on the farm when Dad was alive and we used to plant maize, we'd eat the paddock out, we'd plough it, we'd let it lay for most probably a month, and then we'd just get straight into it with a disc and work it all up and put a bit of lime on it and then get the crop in, and especially for maize, let it die, let that grass die, and that becomes a bit of fertiliser as well. And everything gets rushed this day and age that we live in, and plus the paddock was out for so much longer, but we always end up with good crops, there's no doubt about that, you know.
And what about the carbon in the soil?
Yeah, that's dead right, exactly. You know, it's sort of that was perfect the way we did it, by ploughing it and letting it lie. It was just perfect. It all broke down itself. The worms did their job and it just all broke down itself. It was great. When I was living in Central Hawke's Bay on the main road, the people I was leasing it off said, Steve, would you plough that front paddock by the main road for us, please? I said, yeah, I'd love to. So did that with the six horses. And then he said, actually, I've got a drill. It's a tractor drill, but it will fit behind your forecart. And all you have to do is pull a rope to drop the coulters in the ground and lift them out. Would you plant my crop for me as well? And I said, yeah, I'll do that for you as well. Well, he was so impressed how that crop come up, and it made me feel good. He reckons the horse's pace was made for that drill. He reckons when he hooked it behind his tractor, he went too fast and could never have a good crop. Over. I'm just going to go and turn around in the paddock so the wagon's in the right position to go back in the shed, you see. Yeah, there's your mates, hey? There's your mates. Come up. Over. Whoa. Come around, Jess. They should be able to do it, but they don't do enough of it, eh? That's the thing these days, because they, you know, back in the days with the old taking the milk to the factory, they're always backing into the stage to unload the milk cans and all that sort of thing. Yeah, it's a little bit wet, but it's not that bad. Come on. Good girl. Come around.
Steve Muggeridge backing up his wagon with a little help from his Clydesdales at the base of Mount Taranaki, the new home for his beloved herd.
Hi, I'm Mike King from Pawariki Honey.
And I'm Kate King.
And you'll listen to Country Life
on RNZ National.
Now, this next story is a fitting one, with Anzac Day being commemorated this week, Duncan.
Yes, it's about a former rehab soldier farm, or ballot block, in eastern Wairarapa. The farm's a sheep and beef farm called Tarewa, and it had been in the Hay family since Richard Hay's father drew his name out of a ballot for returned servicemen. The land's just recently been sold into forestry, so Richard held an auction on farm to get rid of his surplus gear. Our producer, Janina Schwanaker, grew up on a neighbouring block, so she thought she'd head home to find out more about Richard's time on the land and what a good second-hand tractor goes for these days.
Can I please have your attention for the commission to come in the sale?
It's a beautiful day here in Wairarapa. The sun is shining and people have already started turning up to the sale. I don't think I've ever seen the wool sheds this busy. There must be close to, I'd say, 60 or so cars. Several dozen parked up here in the paddock outside the wool shed. Lots of familiar faces, locals and other neighbouring properties.
We will notify you when those items come up. We sell everything here today, ladies and gentlemen, on an as-is-where-is basis. I'd just like to hand you over now to Richard to say a few words of welcome and to tell you a little bit about our first lot, the tractor.
Richard Hay has farmed the land here since taking over from his dad. He's been a neighbour to my parents since I was a kid. Now he's sold up, and along with the farm is selling off a host of machines and farming tools collected over the course of a lifetime.
Lot number one, ladies and gentlemen, and a very attractive tractor to start with too. Looks like it's in excellent condition. Lot number one. Brand new, they're worth north of 140,000 here today. He's got what? He's got 90,000, 85, got 80. He's got 75, 70 and away, 70,000. Right, you're all in, 60,000, let's go. And $1,000 all the way here. $60,000, $60,000.
I spoke to Richard about the sale and his time on the farm. He's a sheep and beef farmer through and through, living on the Castle Point Road, about 20 minutes east of Masterton. It's an old rehab farm that was claimed by his dad. I'll tell you more about that later. The farm is called Tarewa.
The meaning of Tarewa means mortgage and marry.
Feels very appropriate for farming.
And Yeah, my parents started on a farm in 1949. I just followed in my father's footsteps, really, like my brother did, and we just carried on farming. I didn't think I'd actually be here. I thought my brother would have been here. But he went off. Father had a farm in Purino, and he went that way. And I had the opportunity here, that sort of way the thing timing went.
And so you've been here farming the land yourself for over 40 years now.
Sue and I have been here for 44 years. And we're basically sheep and beef. Breeding property, ewes, about 4,000 ewes, and between 190 and 200 cows. We're selling the weaners in the autumn.
The decision to sell, especially into forestry, hasn't been an easy one.
It's been up and down over the years. Going through the late 80s with a huge high interest rates, which is much similar as to what's happening now. Similar sort of circumstances. I think this may be even worse. And Sue and I had got to the stage where we didn't need to go through this again. So we still, by buying properties, we'd had to have a mortgage. And so we decided, well, let's move on.
Is that a little bit about, you know, what's factored into the decision to sell the farmers? Yeah, all of the difficulties and the market uncertainty facing farmers these days.
Yes, it is too. Yeah, it is. Yeah, some people might know that I lost my son, James, 13 years ago, and he was coming on board. At 33, he was running the farm and doing everything, and Sue and I were stepping back, but then I had to step back in and take over the farm. In the last 5 years, it's been pretty tough, as I've wanted to try and keep things going. I've had a sort of love-hate relationship with the farm, and it to come to grips with it. It always keeps dragging me back into things which I want to move away from. And so that's was one of our main decisions, to move on and stop worrying about too much anymore, have a bit better end to our lives, and yeah.
Enjoy some time off the land, I suppose.
Yeah, and look for a new opportunity. Well, not opportunities, but looking for something else to do, something different, totally different, perhaps, and keep Sue and I occupied and doing some new adventures or more travel and those sorts of things.
Can you tell me how you are feeling about the upcoming sale of the property?
It hasn't really hit me yet, but it's starting to. When I go out on the farm, I look around and think, well, this might be the last time I see this part of that farm, and yeah.
With the farm going into forestry, a clearing sale was organised for all its now surplus gear. Now back to the tractor sale. The bidders are shy and won't go much above 64,000.
64,000.
With the reserve not met, the tractor's still available. Though the tractor didn't sell, there were plenty of others. As the sale progressed, the crowd warmed up and the bidding wars started. Paul Kuchenbecker walked away happy with his plough.
Well, I managed to score a plough for Farrah for $200 plus GST, and I'm quite happy because now I can go and plant my sunflowers for next year.
Quite happy with the price you walked away with?
Yeah, absolutely. I had a bit higher budget, so I'm quite happy.
Any other items you've got your eye on?
Nah, I just wanted that actually.
Yep. So you've done quite well for yourself today?
Yep, quite pleased. I think the wife will be pleased too.
That's always good.
The items for sale catalogue the many changes seen during Richard's time on the farm. I saw at the sale there's a range of different items from various periods of your farming history. Obviously, I saw the old pack saddle and the hand shears. In what ways has the technology changed during your time as a farmer?
From the old pack saddle, which was my father's, and I used to do a bit of pack saddling when I was shepherding in Gisborne, but surplus to requirements. The technology sides of things, it's when I used to start doing books for the bank and over doing budgets, is all by on a cash book and those sorts of things. But as the computer industry got better and better, of course, it's second to none now, and emails and all that sort of thing has been huge and a heck of a lot simpler than what it used to be. Yeah, those sort of things, and the modern technology that's come through on sheep farming with modern machinery, with handling sheep and crutching and weighing and scanning sheep, that's been really a big advance, knowing exactly what you've got in the sheep and or in the cows, and so you can, you know, you can manage the multiples differently, and hopefully get a bit better survival rather than just shoving them all in one paddock and having them all go hungry. But anyway.
So you've seen quite a few changes in that time in terms of where the profitability is and how hard it is to make a profit sometimes.
I certainly have. We've had to change focus sort of when we sold the Hereford, or moved on from the Hereford, started to focus more on the commercial cattle scene. And then focus more, I had to push myself to push and focus more on my sheep to get the income levels up there. Whereas I was mainly really keen on my cattle more than my sheep. If anything had to be short of feed, it would be a sheep rather than a cattle beast. But
what type of cattle do you have here?
I have a Hereford Angus Cross, or Hereford Cross, whichever way you want to put it. So one of the positives at the moment is beef. Lamb has gone down at the moment, but I think it'll take another couple of years. Once a few hiccups come out of the system, it'll pick up again.
The sale was also a chance to catch up with neighbours and friends. Murray Tomlin farms just down the road and helped with the setup.
Yeah, well, the hay's been here since about 1950. Father.
Yeah,
when they settled the rehab units, because it was him and then Jimmy Hay, and then there was the three up Air Road, and then the two up the Te Pāra Road. So, you know, the seven rehab farms in the district, and his father had the ones.
Is it quite a strange feeling for you, knowing that they won't necessarily be here anymore after such a long time?
Well, he's the last other rehab farmer left. Most of those, the second generation took over the farms, with all of them bar one. And now all those generations, Rich is the last to go, and I'm the last man standing. It's a thing, you know, when my oldest brother started school down here, I think there were 17 kids at the school. When I left the school, there was something like 53.
Mm.
So that's a rural community that built up, and now it's, you know, it's quite sad to feel that both of those blocks, bar a couple of hundred hectares, are all going to be in pine trees. Now they're getting thicker and thicker from here to the coast, which is something, that's the bit that really saddens me. Because this pine tree thing, I believe what the day will come when the country will rue. The fact, you know, it's ruining rural communities, absolutely ruining them.
Rehab farms are a core part of the Wairarapa farming community's history. The government helped many returned servicemen onto rehab or ballot block farms. Land was acquired from larger stations, paid for at the government valuation, with the land then put in a ballot and returned servicemen's names drawn from a hat. A lot of the land in this area, these were rehab settlement farms for returned soldiers.
That's right. Some of the biggest stations had bits cut off them, and to help with all these return servicemen coming back home, to get some of the land broken in and more productive. Yeah, things like introduction of superphosphate into the systems made a huge difference to New Zealand farming. And Sue and I came here in 1980, bought the Bryant property next door to my parents, and the two return servicemen always, my father and John Bryant, always had the agreement if either one of them sold out that they would sell to each other, offer it to each other, and we happened to be first married and had the opportunity to buy the property back in 1980.
I asked Richard about his dad's service.
My father, he served in Italy until later on in the war. He was wounded, then came home, and then after that he came home, and then he went back to driving cattle, and then he got married. And about 48 or 47, I'm not quite sure about my parents. Don't paid. Anyway, and then he got jobs on places like Glenbean Station with his dog skills, and he's a very good dog trialist and won New Zealand championships and things with his dogs. And then he moved on to managing a property in Turamia, and then he had the opportunity to take on the rehab block in 1949. He came and looked at it, and luckily his name came out of the hat and he got the farm, yeah. But mostly this country's been very clear, and there's no gorse on here, thank goodness. It would have been another mortgage. And that sort of things. It was all we had to, my parents had to do, and the Bryants had to do, was start fencing it up. This property, the full 1,430 acres of two properties combined, for a start, was, how do I describe it, five paddocks in total out of 1,400 acres, and they're pretty big, and rabbit fenced, so there's a big rabbit problem here.
How many paddocks do you have nowadays compared?
I've got about 105 paddocks over the whole farm now.
Inside the woolshed, the sale continues. There's sheep handling gear and some household goods.
$3 to $5. Ladies and gentlemen, that completes the offering. Thank you for your spirit of being in attendance.
2 hours later and the sale comes to a close. Just like that, a lifetime of farming memories sold on. Wayne Stewart of PGG Wrightson organised the sale. I asked him how it went.
Oh, very well, overall. Some of the big ticket items haven't sold, but we've got people still showing interest, and one's heading off to just talk to his bank manager, so that's a bit sort of sign of the times in the farming sector, really.
I hear that's the tractor, some negotiations going on there.
Yes, it is, yeah.
And any surprises that you found?
Oh, lots of surprises. One or two disappointments, but I had a lot of surprises, yeah.
Yeah. And happy with the turnout as well?
Oh, very happy, yeah. Yeah, very happy. I think we had just under 60 registered buyers today, I think.
Do you find that these type of farm sales where we're selling farm equipment are becoming more common as we see more farms being sold out of farming?
Oh, definitely. And I think that's been reflected in some of the prices of some of the equipment that's being sold, because there are so many farms going into pine trees now. There's probably almost a surplus of equipment out there in the farming sector.
Anything you would have been tempted by yourself at all, or for a friend?
I did actually buy a few things today.
Oh, you did? What did you take home?
I bought a kayak for the grandkids and a grader blade for the drive to get rid of the potholes.
Oh, good on you.
With the sale wrapped up, people start collecting their winning bids. Richard seemed happy.
How are you feeling about how that went today?
Pretty good, really. I think most things have sold. Just about a total clearance, and some things went cheap, but and some others went for better money than I thought they would should.
Any big surprises there?
Not really. Yeah, I didn't sell the big ticket item, but
a big tractor.
I've got a guy interested in that, so a
bit more negotiation maybe.
Yeah, he's got to go to the bank and ask for more money, and we'll see what happens there.
Happy with the turnout and everything? Good day for it as well?
Oh, it's been a great day, and good to see a few old farming friends and faces and those sort of things. Saying farewell, where we're going, and all those questions that come out when you sell your farm. It's been a really interesting day and a couple of weeks getting organised for all this. Yeah.
Big day,
yeah.
Starting to feel a bit more real, I suppose.
It is, really.
I asked Richard, what comes next?
The 1st of May, we're supposed to be leaving here, moving on the house into the new house in town. But we still got our livestock on, some of our sheep still, but will still be on. With an agreement with the people who bought the property, they're planting pine trees, and they want us to keep the grass under control up until it's planted, and that'll start probably first, second week of June, and we'll be out of here hopefully by the 20th of June with our livestock, and then that'll be all signed over to the new owners.
And I hear that you're probably going to keep on working a little bit in agriculture every now and then, possibly chasing the seasons with some contract driving maybe, or
yes, I will be. I know I've been approached by my neighbour to be the tractor driver, and I've had two or three offers of doing that, or tractor driving, or driving a truck or something. Just something going around off my trolley.
Yeah.
Keep me busy. I've got a few projects for the first 6 months. And once we get to town, a bit of building and fencing to do, and a bit of landscaping. Most of it will be done, but yeah, get it to Sue's design, what she wants.
Yeah, very sensible, smart man. Oh, well, it won't be the same without you guys next door, I'll be honest.
Well, thank you.
I imagine, yeah, a bit bittersweet for you, possibly.
It is, yeah.
Richard shared some parting advice.
You just put one foot in front of the other, and when tough times get tough, you try and keep your chin up and focus on the positive stuff and don't get too dragged down. If you do, you've got to stop yourself from getting too far down in the dumps. It'll just drag yourself down. Yeah. Mm,
a day at a time type thing.
Yeah, you do. You take a day, you achieve that. So it's a bit like this selling the farm. Sue and I are just taking a day at a time. Everything's been coming at us for the last month. And, people calling in and, yes.
Oh, pesky journalist neighbours.
wanting to buy things and that sorts of things. Yeah, so it's been interesting, that's for sure.
That was Richard Hay. Janina also spoke to Paul Kuchenbecker, Murray Tomlin and Wayne Stewart. Tarewa's cattle were sold on Wednesday. The remaining ewes will be sold in early June after scanning, and then the farm will be planted up as a commercial forest. Hey-ho.
Well, that's all we have time for this week. Thanks very much for joining us, and don't forget to send us an email, country@rnz.co.nz, if you have any feedback or story ideas.
Bye now.
Ka kite anō.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.